Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast, where we share spiritual and practical ideas for how to live family life with a beautiful, self-sacrificing love. Today, we are joined by Katie Hinderer, social media strategist and founder of Rosebud Social, a marketing company focused on creating intentional, person-centered content for mission-driven brands. Katie is going to share with us her knowledge on social media and how we can help our children navigate the online landscape. Katie, we're excited to have you on the other side of the podcast.
Thanks. It's kind of funny to be on the other side since after two seasons of hosting the Ferris Love podcast, I'm now on the interviewee side.
And you get to share with us your expertise in social media. So a lot of parents have concerns about social media and are unsure as to when to introduce social media to their children, whether they start it off in high school, whether they should give it to them in grade school. And it kind of has it can instill a lot of fear. What are your thoughts on those concerns from parents?
I think they are super valid concerns for the parents to have. And definitely, I don't want to diminish or downplay those at all. I do also think, though, that parents who keep their kids away from social media and a lot of like the online space until they go off to college or beyond can actually be doing more harm than good to their children. I think because we want to, when we have children at home in our homes, we want to be taking advantage of that time when we have them so close to us to teach them really good use of the different things like that. We want to teach them really good ideals for how to use them, techniques, tricks, tips, all of that kind of thing. And when we send a child off to college and we give them a smartphone for the first time and we let them get on the social media, it can be very difficult for these children to navigate when they're an 18-year-old with not yet fully developed brains. And suddenly they've been given this, you know, we always tell the story in my family of we weren't allowed to have video games when we were growing up. And that was just like a family thing. We didn't have video games. And then one of my brothers took all of his graduation money from high school and bought a video game console and a bunch of video games when he went off to college. And he flunked out of his first semester of freshman year because he spent so much time playing video games because he had never learned how to practice temperance when it came to that. He never learned what that looks like. And I think social media can be the same, right? I heard a really great example once, an anecdote of you wouldn't give your 16-year-old the keys to your car and say, good luck. You're not old enough. You are 16. You are legally allowed to have a car, drive, and let me know how it goes. You wouldn't. In the same way with social media and a smartphone, we don't want to just hand it to our kid and say, here you go. You're old enough now. We've decided. And then just let them loose in the online world. So that's my thoughts on it. I think it's really, really helpful to have starting in high school, maybe not freshman year, but kind of working their way up. And we can talk about different tips and tricks for doing that and kind of bringing that into your family. But I think it's really important for kids to start experimenting and having it in high school.
Right. And you mentioned temperance as a virtue to build. How would you recommend the parents teaching their children temperance, but also are there any additional virtues that are required to be able to use social media well?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think temperance, obviously, when we think of social media, is kind of the number one virtue because it is literally designed to have us not live temperance and not be able to live temperance, right? If you've ever watched The Social Network, which I highly recommend, right? Like these things are built with human psychology in mind to keep us hooked and keep us scrolling. And so teaching our children temperance from a very early age, when they're very little, even before they have smartphones, before they have social media, is a really good first step to having them be able to have temperance when they get social media. So maybe that's something as simple as, I don't know. No, you don't get a second glass of milk at dinner. You can have water instead, right? Teaching them little ways of living temperance. Okay, you can watch 30 minutes of this show after school, and then it's off to do your homework and these kinds of things. Or as a family, we're not going to, whatever, we're giving up TV for Lent. I don't know. There's all these different ways that you can practice temperance with your kids. So I definitely think that is first and foremost. And then the other thing I would say is really important, and it's not a virtue necessarily, but I think what is most important for teaching our children in order to have them navigate social media really well is to give them a very strong sense of identity, right? When we know who we are as beloved daughters and sons of God, as beloved daughters and sons of our parents, as brothers and sisters, siblings, as nieces and nephews, as cousins, whatever. as beautifully, wonderfully, uniquely made in the image and likeness of God, we are going to have a much easier time not falling into the traps of social media, because we will not feel as prone to the comparison trap. We will not feel as lacking as some others who are unsure of their identity and unsure kind of where they fit into the world at large. So I think it's not a virtue necessarily, but it is a core fundamental foundational thing that I think we need to start teaching our children early on to have them use social media really well.
That's a really strong point, especially since children are being introduced to social media a lot earlier in, mm-hmm. in their development, and seeing that trend and the progression of comparison and mm-hmm. a lot of sad results coming from that. Sure. How would you recommend parents go about showing them? I mean, you mentioned, you know, understanding that they are children of God, but when they're being introduced to social media so young and having all these images and a comparison presented to them, mm-hmm. easy access, how sure. would you suggest parents go about helping them establish that identity very clearly?
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I think is really helpful, especially as you're giving your children social media early on, maybe, you know, in high school or whatever, is doing it with them almost, right? Like making sure you also have the password so you can get on and see their Instagram account or see their TikTok or whatever. And then every now and then, not in a like hovering helicopter parent type of way, but in a like, I love you and I'm like interested in what you're doing in your life type of way, the same way I attend your basketball games because I care about you, I'm also gonna sit on the couch with you and scroll TikTok with you. And then we're gonna have really good conversations about that last video and how that made you feel. Right. And we're going to talk that through, and I'm going to understand the things that she's seeing or he's seeing, the way that they're reacting to these things. I'm going to watch their face maybe instead of watching the video that they're scrolling through, and have these deep, really good conversations. I think too often parents are afraid to have these conversations, or afraid that they're like smothering or hovering or like just let their kids be when it comes to this, or don't do it at all and they'll figure it out on their own. And I think we want to be their companions in this. We want to guide them along the way, just like we guide them in all other areas, right? When they come home and they're like, Susie, stop talking to me. And we're like, okay, well, let's talk that through, right? Why did Susie stop talking to you? What happened? The same way with our social media. So I think that's part of it. And then I think also another big part of helping these kids create and understand really more than create their sense of identity and worth is the way that we treat them and the way that they see us experiencing social media and experiencing ourselves, right? So if we are often very down on ourselves, very not quick to compliment, right? Quick to find fault, our kids learn from us and they will then be quick to find fault in themselves. They will be unable to compliment themselves and see the good that they have in themselves, even if we as parents are pointing out the good things in them. Right? The same way with us. So I think a lot of it has to come from emulating to them our own worth, our own great dignity, and then helping them kind of see that through themselves as well.
And how do you, so one of the things that you had mentioned was just kind of doing it with your children. I think that's a really fun thing. I think about my mom sending me reels and stuff and just enjoying it together. And how do you, so one of the fears I think of parents could be children spending too much time on the social media, not having those guardrails up, because eventually you want to let your children go, right, in college. So what are some like best practices to start teaching your children right off the bat about social media, about the, you know, being online, and then how they could implement that further on their own?
Sure. So best practices, I think, for social media, and I think this is true for our kids, but I think this is really true for ourselves as adults as well. And I have to say, I often give presentations to teenagers, to kids, and a lot of them will come up to me afterwards and say, I think my parents have a bigger problem with social media than I do. Or my parents are on their phone more than I am. And they're always on my case about it, but they're always on their phones. So these kind of best practices I want to share, I want to encourage you as the parents to do and practice, and then also to teach your children how to do them. So I have three really easy ones that are kind of my like die on this hill type of best practices. Number one is to turn off all of your push notifications, except maybe the ones when your phone legitimately rings and maybe text messages from certain people like family and, you know, that you need to get. Otherwise, all the apps. I will tell you, so I am a social media manager. I manage a ton of different accounts. I have 3 different phones actually, so that I can have all of the accounts, because Instagram only allows you to have 6 or 7 accounts attached to one phone. So I have all these phones, et cetera. And I have all my notifications turned off. I don't get a single notification from Instagram, not from TikTok, not from Snapchat, not from BeReal. I don't get any notifications on my phone. And why is that a best practice to turn off? Because the point of the push notification is to drop a little bit of dopamine in your brain and then get you to pick up your phone and open up that app for more surges of dopamine throughout your scrolling time, right? And the more you do that, the more you need. So the more you scroll, et cetera, et cetera. It's just an endless cycle. And so when you turn off that push notification that you get, so your phone is not constantly lighting up with these notifications, you are telling the apps and you are making the choice to be autonomous and say, I'm going to get on Instagram now because I am choosing to get on Instagram, not because a notification psyched my brain out basically, right? And almost forced me in a certain sense to get on. So turn off your push notifications, turn your kids' push notifications off, except for, like I said, phone calls and the actual text messaging app in the iPhone are the only 2 notifications I get. The second I would say would be to set screen limits. So you can do that on Androids or on iPhones. You can go into the settings and you can set limits either specifically for an app. So if you have a particular app that you tend to fall down the rabbit hole of, or you play Candy Crush until the early hours of the morning, you can set up specific time limits for the amount of time you can spend on that app. But a lot of them too have the option to set up time limits for certain types of apps, right? So like for social media apps, you allow yourself an hour a day, and that could be spread out over 5 different apps, or it could be all spent on one app and that's fine. Same with games or whatever. So I think setting screen time limits is really important as a 2.5 to that one. I think also, setting up downtime on your phone where your phone either like shuts off or goes into kind of like almost like airplane mode at a certain hour of the night. And it stays that way until a certain hour of the morning, I think is really important. My phone goes into down mode at 8 o'clock at night. So literally everything gets silenced starting at 8 o'clock at night, and it doesn't go out of that mode until 8 o'clock in the morning. So I have 12 hours of like nothing. And obviously you can override that, but I think that's really important. And then my third kind of suggestion for best practices that I think is really good for parents, but also for kids, is to plan tech breaks with some frequency to give yourself a chance to break that dopamine high that comes from social media in a very strategic way. So often I am not on my phone at all on Sundays, or as little as possible on a Sunday. I try not to be on the social media apps on Sunday, to just give myself a kind of weekly tech break. Now, obviously I spend a ton of time on social media and on my phone, for work. So I do that. But then also as a company, for instance, I give my employees and myself the entire week between Christmas and New Year's off. And I encourage them all to not be on their phones, or at least not be on their phones at all for anything work-related, so that all of us can just do that little digital detox in order to kind of reset, right? And make sure that we're doing things really well. And I will say, you know, after this year of doing that, I came back with so many more ideas and spending so much less time on my phone, even though I'm still obviously doing everything that we need to for the clients and things like that. So those would be my 3: turn off notifications, set screen limits, and plan tech breaks with some frequency.
Those are all excellent too, because they're so easy. Mm-hmm. Matter of just setting some things up and not having to worry about it. You had mentioned a little earlier about talking to some high schoolers about, you know, their consumption of media versus their parents. Is there anything else that you've heard from high schoolers about social media that mm-hmm. has made you, you know, consider looking at it differently?
So I think, I mean, overall, I will say, they spend a ton of time on their apps and they don't often know how much time they spend. So one of the favorite activities I always do with them when I give a presentation like this at a high school or a leadership group or something like that is to have them guess how many hours they think they spend a week on their favorite app. Just guess, like just come up with their random idea, and they all tell me what their favorite app is. And then they all give me their guesstimate. And usually they guess about 8 to 10 hours a week is their usual guess for how much time they spend on whatever their favorite app is. Mostly now it's TikTok for most of the kids, although sometimes it's other things as well. So then what I have them do is pull up their actual phones and look at the amount of time they actually spent on that app this past week, because your phone gives you all that data, and to look at that. And so all of them are shocked. None of them overestimate ever the amount of time they spend on their phone. All of them significantly underestimate the amount of time they spend on their phones. And then the extras that I have them do, because I think in that small of an increment, that it's just not that impactful to them. They're like, okay, great. So I spend 20 hours a week on my phone, but like I got 100 and whatever, 68 hours in my week, like no big deal. Great. So what I have them do is take that number and multiply it by 52 to see how many hours in the year they spend on that app. And then I have them divide that number by 24 to see how many total days of the year they have literally just given up to their favorite social media app. Now, this is not all social media. This is not their whole phone. This is literally just their favorite app. I have them do that. And then we discuss it. And I will say, most of the time I do this, the number is somewhere between 25 and 60 days of every year the kids spend on their favorite app, usually right around there, right? So, and I will say that in doing this for the last 10 years or so, that number has gone up increasingly over the years, right? It used to be a little bit closer to 15 to 20 when I first started doing this exercise, but now it's definitely in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and some, I think 70 something was the highest I've ever heard, but like, it's a lot, right? So that is another exercise actually that, that's something that I see often with the kids. And I think that's actually another really good exercise that parents can do with themselves first to assess how they're using it themselves and to see what changes they need to make. And then it's a really good one to do with your kids, and not in a judgmental way, not in a like, how in the world are you spending 20 hours a week on TikTok? It's in a like, whoa, you're spending 20 hours a week on TikTok. Like, why? What are you getting out of that? How does that make you feel after you spend 3 hours scrolling TikTok? Like what happens to you? Do you feel like a better person after it? What have you learned as a result of it? Like having a good conversation. And it might be the way you have to have that conversation is you guys both do it together. And then you say, honest to God, I spent 14 hours this week on Facebook and you spent 20 on TikTok. So let's talk about that. What do we get out of that? Why are we doing this? And having a really good open communication conversation about that can be very, very helpful to doing that. So I would say that's probably the thing that I see the most when I do these presentations.
That's wild. I'm curious how much mine would be.
I know. But,
You had mentioned, you've mentioned several apps. Okay. You've mm-hmm. mentioned TikTok. You've mentioned obviously Instagram and Facebook. Mm-hmm. There are a lot out there. Which ones would you suggest parents kind of be wary of? Which ones would you say are really, you know, pretty decent in the sense of, let's say, sharing things?
Yeah. I love this question because my response is not what people normally think. So for the most part, I would say, I think they're all pretty much the same. And I think it's a matter of how you or your child train your algorithm. You can find really, really good content on almost any platform, and you can find really, really horrible content on almost any platform. So it's a little bit a matter of how you're using the app and what you're doing with it. We train our algorithm. We can talk about that in another question if we want, but we can do that. So honestly, I don't think that there's a like, ooh, you must be on this. Ooh, you must not be on that. The only one that really gives me pause is Snapchat. And that's only because the images are very private and they delete after 24 hours. And so that tends to be the one that most people, adults and children included, have the largest problem with, right? Because they think that when things appear and then disappear after 24 hours, they're gone forever. And I think especially as children, we're lulled into that idea of like, it's gone, it doesn't matter. And so we can send anything, we can say anything, we can do anything, whether that's bullying or sending something that's, you know, like sexually provocative or things like that. So Snapchat is the one that I'm like, I would not suggest it. With that said, my family has it and we have a family group that, you know, chat that goes back and forth. And I think for all of my siblings, it's the only reason we use it is just for the family group text that goes back and forth for most of us. So I'm not saying it's a horrible, horrible app. I think you just want to be very aware of it if you have a young child, because again, they're prefrontal cortex is not developed yet. And so they don't understand that these things last forever. To give you an example of this, so for a while I worked for a startup app that was basically like you went somewhere, you would take a picture of where you were, and then you kind of shared a review of the place. It was kind of a mix of a little bit of a Twitter, a little bit of a app that used to be called Foursquare, where you kind of review things anyway. And people could share photos. And so we had to go in and like approve photos or whatnot. And the photos disappeared after a certain amount of time, kind of similar to Snapchat, not instantaneously, but pretty quickly. And, or you could delete them. Right. And we on the servers had access to every single photo, every photo. And like, as a team, people sent around photos that they thought were funny that had been posted by users that were deleted or disappeared, and they were never gone. Like they were literally being sent around in the company's emails. So I think that is just really good to know that like, they're not gone. Like you think they're off of Snapchat and they're never gone. So to be aware of that, but that's my answer. I think you can train any algorithm to give you good content on any platform.
Well, and you mentioned training your algorithm for someone, let's say if you've never heard of that term before, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It sounds like training your dog.
It's true. So the algorithm is basically the computer programming basically of any particular app that reads your usage of the app to determine the type of content that you are most likely to engage with and enjoy, and the type of content that you're most likely to not engage with and enjoy, so that it can continue to feed you the type of stuff that you like and to hide the type of stuff that you don't like, right? So we see this a lot. I think we're going to see this a lot coming closer to election season, right? Where you see a lot of people who, if you follow people on both sides of the spectrum and both sides of the political spectrum, you'll see a lot of people posting and be like, I don't understand. I don't know anyone who is XYZ, opposite of what they are, right? No one in my feed is talking about this. How are people voting for this person? And you're like, well, right, because your algorithm has been trained based on who you like, the things that you're looking at, to give you those people over and over and over again. And they've been trained to not give you the other people. So you literally think like the whole world must think the way that I think because this is the algorithm. So that's something that we happen to see a lot in politics, but this happens a lot on Instagram too. I laugh because we have a lot of different clients and they have a lot of different niches. And so when I get onto the different clients' pages, their feeds all look very different, right? I can get on one and it can be full of, you know, one type of post. I can get on another and they have different types of posts because each company has trained their algorithm to give them the type of people that they want to see, right? Or recently I picked up the habit of watercoloring. And so I look at a lot of watercolor tutorials. So my explore page on Instagram on my personal account is full of watercolor tutorials. On my business account, it's full of social media hacks because I have, by the posts that I've liked, the posts that I've shared, the posts that I've saved, and the posts that I've just paused to look at without liking or saving or sharing or commenting on, but I've paused, I have told the algorithm, I want more of this. And I think that is something really important for people to know, that you train your algorithm. So if you don't like the content that you're seeing, it's because you have created it to be that way. And you can change that.
And you can change that. So how would that look if you just start looking at other things? Or so a lot of media is these funny videos, dog videos, whatever you want to call them. But then there's also like good information out there. So how could you, let's say as a parent, help your child train their algorithm, or how could you help them to establish like a great algorithm? And how easy is it to differ or to change from?
So the algorithm is shockingly easy to change in the short run. So, you know, when I picked up watercolors, like I'd never had a single painting, art, watercolor, anything in my feed. And now I have a lot of it. And then like, I kind of fell off the wagon and didn't watercolor for like 3 months. And there was like nothing watercolor-esque in my feed at all. And now I'm like back to watercoloring and now I've got watercolors again. So it's pretty easy to change in the short run, but it keeps long-term ideas too of you. And so while I'm still getting watercolor videos, I still am also always getting, for instance, like pictures of large families, right? Because I'm the oldest of nine. And so for years, always in my explore page, I see, you know, other photos of large Catholic families, right? Like that's just, it knows me. It's, that's a long-term thing. So I think, how do we train our algorithm? I think we have to be very aware of what we are looking at, what we're pausing at, and what we're engaging with. And I think what often happens, and I think this is why there's this common misconception out there that, social media is horrible and bad and it's full of evil stuff. And there's like not much good out there. It's because what often happens is the stuff that we disagree with or the stuff that kind of gets us fired up, we pause, we read, maybe we don't engage because we're like, I'm not going to like this and I'm not going to comment because I'm not going to add to it. But maybe we send it to a friend and say, can you believe this? Or maybe we don't even do that. Maybe we screenshot it, but we've stayed on that post long enough to train the algorithm and it doesn't know you're staying on it because you don't like it. It knows you're staying on it. So therefore it's going to give you more of that. And so then the next day you're going to see more of the same content in your feed and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, here's another one. And you're going to pause and you're going to read it and you're going to get upset. So the more you recognize the way that you use the app and the things like that, and the more you can just skip over them, not share them, not save them, not send them to other people, the more you can train your algorithm to give you the good stuff that you want and to avoid that kind of bad stuff that you don't want to see.
That's great advice. And what would you give as like kind of a summary of how parents can help their children in navigating that introducing them to social media and navigating that world? Do you have any piece of advice that maybe you haven't mentioned yet or?
Sure. I think in terms of the algorithm, again, like one of those things like sitting down on the couch and like looking at their explore page on Instagram, the For You page on TikTok, scrolling through their feed on Facebook, if they have Facebook, with which most children do not these days, and talking to them about it. Like, why is this person showing up in your feed? Right? Like, what's up with that? How come you have all these videos about whatever, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce? Are you obsessed? What's going on? Right? Like whatever. So I think doing that with them, I think is really important. And then also helping them understand that like, basically we vote with the way that we use our eyes and our thumbs on social media, right? So if we're double clicking or if we're pausing to look at things, and helping them understand that, helping them understand they have great power to bring goodness into the world by the things that they pause on and the things that they like, or to continue spreading kind of some of this not so great stuff that's out in the world, right? And so to see social media as this really powerful force for good, if we use it well, and to teach our children how to use it well through their likes, their comments, their shares, their saves, and the way they spend their eyes.
Excellent. And where can we find you and what you do? Because you do excellent things. So can you share with
us? So rosebudsocial.com is our website. We do social media marketing and kind of management for a lot of people, and then also coaching and that kind of thing. And then we're on Facebook and Instagram at Rosebud Social, also on Threads and X, although not as much, but also all at Rosebud Social. So pretty easy.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Katie, for being on the show with us.
You bet. Love talking about my favorite topic. So that was easy.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2024, we want to reach as many people as possible. You can help by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovestshrine.org.